Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the DataBits podcast. I can't tell you how excited I am to have one of my favorite people in the SQL Server world on the show. We actually met way back probably 4 years ago, and I called him a stalker in the parking lot of a SQL Saturday. So that's that story may come up a little bit. But today we have David Klee with us, and he is living in the heartland of America, and just like everybody else right now, he's locked down. He's stuck at home because of the whole COVID thing, and that's probably all we'll talk about that, hopefully. But David, welcome to the show, and would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Cool. Thanks for having me. My name is David Klee. I call myself a certified nerd. I made peace with the fact that I am a nerd many, many, many years before it was arguably socially acceptable. I've honestly made the best I can of it. I'm lucky enough to be a Microsoft Data Platform MVP and a VMware vExpert. Nice. That means I get a little bit of influence to try to steer some of these things in directions to make all of our lives a little bit easier. I am the founder and principal nerd, so to speak, of Heraflux Technologies. We do some niche market consulting with really databases and performance tuning and availability for databases and down.
Okay. Just real quick, what does the name Heraflux mean? Is that just something that sounded cool, or does it get something a little deeper behind it?
Well, one, the .com name was there, so
it was available, so I took it.
It was available, but there actually is a meaning to it. So you know the phrase, the only constant is change?
Certainly.
It was coined by a Greek philosopher by the name of Heraclitus. Mm-hmm. So there actually is a meaning to this. In IT, the only constant truly is unexpected and rapid change. Mm-hmm. And the change itself creates a lot of flux in our world. There's a lot of change going on with the role of the DBA today, virtualization, cloud, mainframes back in the day. You know, if you're not prepared to keep up with positive forward change, get out of the way. So Heraflux, you know, it's straightforward. Plus, honestly, the .com name was there.
I'm just glad you didn't say, well, the name was available and the corporation was available for sale, so I bought it.
No.
That's a thing you can do, apparently.
It is. Actually, it took me 2 months to come up with that name. I wanted something that actually had meaning behind it.
Yeah. Well, my company name was equally complicated, you know, because I'm a DBA in the Dallas area, so I went with Dallas DBAs.
That works, and it's unique, so why not?
That it actually started as originally 20 years ago, I bought that domain, hoping for it to be more of a forum-based just group of local people that got to know each other better, because there really wasn't good technology for that at the time. But now with Google Groups and all these other things, it didn't make sense to try to put something like that together. But and the SQL user group here is huge.
Yeah, you've got
2,000 people
on
the mailing list, 100 people at the meetings, things like that.
That's awesome.
Unless we get the Bob Ward effect, and then there's 200 people trying to get in the door. Pizza disappears because somebody inhaled and it's all gone.
But, you know, I'd rather have it that way. Even the smaller groups I'm happy to be a part of, but it's really cool to see a community come together like that. You know, Dallas, Chicago, Atlanta, Denver, I mean, just amazing groups.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I've been around this one. I think I started going to things in 2004, perhaps.
Was on the
board originally when they were still trying to form as a legal entity, and then it became part of PASS. And you know, I took a 10-year break from doing community stuff for family reasons, and that's all good now. But then I was actually back on the board here recently, and had to drop out for medical reasons, not pandemic reasons, but other stuff going on. I try to do something, and something else happens, and change being, you know, the constant, of course.
I hear you. I got lucky. I actually knew John Morehouse long, long time ago, another figurehead in the SQL Server space. He actually started the Omaha SQL Server user group in 2008, and I found out about it and made it to the very first meeting there, got to know him well.
Nice.
I've been a part of that chapter ever since.
Excellent. Yeah, he's a great guy. I see him more on Twitter than anywhere else, of course, just like almost all the SQL community, especially now with virtual meetings and whatnot.
Exactly.
How did you get started in tech? Are you one of those guys that was programming, you know, line number basic in middle school, or what was your start?
Well, it's, you know, kind of personal, but at the same time, I was always the kid that got picked on, you know, elementary school, middle school, high school. My grandmother was a librarian. So, you know, parents were always occupied, busy. So I spent a lot of time at the library, and they had a TRS-80 in there. My parents were cool enough. They bought me a Tandy Color Computer 2 when I was 5.
When you were 5?
when I was five.
For real? Wow.
I like I said, I have been a nerd since long before it was socially acceptable. Mm-hmm. You know, this was a time when you would get the magazines with all the basic code in there, and you'd have to type it in by hand, and I would spend days typing this stuff in there. Uh-huh. And, you know, so I learned BASIC, I think, when I was seven. Mm-hmm. and when I was nine, I built my first computer with parts that I had scavenged from just various stuff. Mm-hmm. My dad also taught recording. He also taught music lessons out of the house. So when I was 11, my dad put a sign there that said, "My son will fix your computer." Nice. And I got lucky because all these people would bring me all these computers to either fix or rebuild or, you know, modify. And I got to keep all their spare parts.
That's awesome.
So it was cool because I, you know, instead of doing the normal middle school, high school jobs for money, I was rebuilding computers when I could and was making pretty good money with it and learned a lot from that and took my first job as an official help desk person in high school. Moved up from there, got a job as basically a junior sysadmin, or really the only sysadmin, at this really small engineering firm in Middle Georgia where I grew up. And you know, that was basically high school and college. And I can tell you a funny story from this.
Please. We love a good story around here. That's the best part.
When you repair a lot of computers like this, and this is back in the day when you would actually repair them and not throw them away, mm-hmm. you always wanted a way to mark the computers that you've worked on so you knew you had been there.
Right.
I don't know if it was a pride thing or a nerd thing or whatever, but I found, this is from a long time ago, 1.5-inch tall rubber chickens. You know, a lot of people would use stickers okay. or boring stuff, but I've got a weird sense of humor. So I would epoxy or, you know, rubber cement a rubber chicken about 1.5 inches tall, finely detailed, to the inside of every one of these computers. So one, if I open a computer and I see a chicken, like, cool, I'd already worked on this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a joke that keeps on giving because if somebody else opens that computer in the future, they're going to go, what? And I ordered 5,000 of these rubber chickens.
Okay.
I have one left. That's how many of these machines that I
worked on. Wow, that's incredible.
And I have kept that as a shrine to basically just a geeky childhood.
I know nobody else can see this, but I mean, I've got the ducks back here. I don't have any. Yep. I don't have any rubber chickens.
Check it out. Go to Amazon, look up Chicken Chucker, and these same rubber chickens. It's like a little stupid little toy that you can fling a rubber chicken at somebody, but they're tiny. Those were the kinds of chickens that I bought. Very similar back in the day.
That's the goofiest story I've heard in a long time. I love it. I love it.
I got weird stuff like this. You know, it's life is too serious. You know, we all have really hard jobs. It's stressful. There's, you know, mm-hmm. we're the gatekeepers of the data. If it goes down, we're the first to get called.
Oh, yeah.
So I tend to laugh at everything.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, we'd all just go insane, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I used to stress about this stuff a lot. And when I was the first time, when I was a DBA, I made my fair share of stupid mistakes and killed things and broke production, just like every other DBA has done to some degree. You know, reboot the production server. Oh, no. The end of the world. No, it's not. You might get a reprimand or, you know, they might give you the hairy eyeball when they look at you funny. But you got to look back or look at things from I've got this problem in front of me and it's on fire and it smells like a dumpster. But in 5 years, is this going to be a big deal? In 10 right. years, is this going to even be in my memory bank? No. All right. Now it's in context. Now I can deal with it. Yep. It's not, I lost a family member. It's this computer is slow. It's considerably yeah. different. Life is not your job. And for some yeah. people, it is. When you're first starting out, your job is enhancing and describing what your life is going to be like, but it can't be everything. I guess unless you're, you know, a military commander or a high level official or something where pretty much everything you do is seen by a lot of eyes, but we don't have that problem.
No. I mean, there are scary times. A little while back, I did some work at a small hospital in the middle of nowhere. You know, great folks. The ERP system took 5.5 minutes to pull up a patient record.
Ouch.
And the EMR system strictly would prohibit any changes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these folks had a slow storage device. You know, it is what it is, but indexing would bring it down to less than half of a second.
Mm-hmm.
They even had a routine. The nurse would walk into the patient room, type in their field to search for them and leave, and the doctor knew to come in 5 minutes later because then the record would be up on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
It was really scary. And long story short, I'm there late one night doing some patching, some Friday night. I had the permission from the head of the hospital to take everything down, right at midnight, bring it back up by one, no big deal. 11:45, I'd always walk around just to make sure that everything was okay, because, I mean, I have to sleep at night. If somebody's been wheeled in, I'm not going to take stuff down. I'll stay later and, you know, whatever, I'll wait.
Yeah.
Well, 11:50, somebody gets brought into the emergency room, drug overdose, couldn't speak. And the ER was right next to the IT office, and I heard the head of the guy say through the open door, "Darn it, she was here last week. We gave her something that she was allergic to, and it almost killed her."
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, I had been working on the indexes for this to pitch to the vendor to go put this in there, and it's like, you know, I have a conscience. I can't do this.
So it's literally a life or death situation.
Yeah. And the stuff was up on the screen because I was working on it. So I ran over and did the index on the patient table. And about 30 seconds later, I hear somebody in the ER scream, "Stop." The screen refreshed sooner than they thought because of the index that went in. Mm-hmm. And the head of the ER was about to inject her with the same thing that she almost died from a week earlier.
Wow. So you literally just potentially saved a life on that.
An index may have saved a life.
That's the hospital emergency room scenario has come up in so many interviews I've been on.
Yeah.
Where they don't tell you what it is. And I, you know, like, there's a SQL server. It's slow. How would you troubleshoot it? And I'm, you know, at this point, I'm like, you know, what is this one doing? What is the impact of it right now? But, you know.
Yeah. It's scary. That still haunts me. You know, so long story short, put the index went in. 10 minutes later, the patient's up and walking around because they gave her the thing that she wasn't allergic to and everything was fine. And went to the CEO that following Monday and just said, "Look, here's what happened. So what I'm going to do for you is I'm going to build you this transcript. Here's the before. Here's the after. Here's the rollback script. The vendor gets in twice a year to do routine updates. You let me know. And I'm going to get in the night before, and I'm going to undo all of my index changes. They won't know the difference. They're going to get in and do their patches. And then I'll get in and actually validate that they haven't actually fixed this, and they never have. And then I'll get in and reapply what's needed. And then you can use the system properly so that people don't die."
It's kind of hard to argue with that point, I would think.
Yeah. And I do it for free because it's the right thing to do. You know, and I've since gotten to know pretty much the head of the entire hospital, all of them, and they're phenomenal folks. You know, they're actually good friends of mine now.
Yep. Yeah, I was having a conversation earlier today about, I really wish the third-party software developers of decent, you know, mid to large size, your big ERPs, your middle-level ones, where they've got, you know, more than a dozen customers, would at least contract out to a DBA on the front side as they're developing to get those indexes right. And I get that there's different workloads for different customers and whatnot, but I see stuff come through that's got nothing on it. It's just, there's nothing. And we can't touch them because it avoids the support contract. And it just drives me insane. You know, you sent something out the door that's not going to perform at any kind of scale.
Yeah.
So tell me, after the chicken stories and the working from 5 years old and nine all the way up and adult, what did you do? What did you do in college? You mentioned it, but what was your major, if you will, and how did you carry that off workforce?
I started in a computer engineering program, got about halfway through it and realized that it was more DSP and math and more design and less application, and I wanted more hands-on. So I switched to computer science, actually transferred schools in the middle of that, lost some time, not a big deal. but basically through the entire bit of college, it was – you know, learning web application development, learning databases, was still sysadmins for a number of folks to really, you know, keep the hands dirty on the back end with making all this stuff run, trying to find ways for different nonprofits where I was doing, you know, volunteer work with to help the platforms just work. You know, there's a lot of stuff that Microsoft does for nonprofits and got to know a lot of that. But really just kind of evolved into the software side of things while keeping my hands dirty on the platform that everything ran on. You know, I've always been interested in a lot of that stuff. And even to the point where I did 11 months of a project with a state mental asylum doing IT work. The kid in college did an Active Directory migration for Windows NT 3.51 to Windows 2000. Wow. It was a blast, and I finished it early, and then hand rebuilt 300 workstations for them.
Wow, That kind of repetitive stuff would drive me insane, but you were into it.
It was one where it became a routine. It was complete flex time, so I could work whatever hours I could given the school schedule. Mm-hmm. It was honestly really good money, you know, especially for a state gig, because they liked me. I got the job done early, had my own office. I mean, it was fun.
Yeah, nobody go in there. That's David's office. Don't touch anything.
No, actually, we had part of an unused wing in one of the administration buildings at this mental asylum. So, I mean, it was great during the day. It was kind of creepy at night. But I have a tremendous respect for people that can spend a career working in that kind of environment. It's absolutely critical. And to be able to be a part of this to help them do their jobs better just felt good.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get,
you know, plus, the history of the place was cool. The place was built in the 1850s. I mean, it was just really neat.
1850s. Yeah, I can imagine that was a creepy at night, no matter what it's doing.
Yep.
Just because the architecture, nothing else. Things were a tad darker back then.
It was gorgeous. So it was cool.
It wasn't named Arkham, was it?
No. I don't want to name it because we're not supposed to name that kind of stuff.
Well, yeah, but I had to throw a Batman joke in there. Come on. We're all nerds here. We can do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Superhero stuff.
Actually watched Dark Knight last night.
I need to watch those again. Maybe one or two of them, not so much. But Bane, that one.
Yeah.
I need to get that one going.
Yeah.
We have run through at my house probably three times now the entire, all the way chronologically, the Marvel stuff. You know, except for the original couple of Hulks. Not so big a fan of those, but all the way up through Endgame. We turned my wife into a 12-year-old boy at some point because she just loves this stuff. The first time through, she wasn't even watching it with us. She was just there playing on her phone. In the movie, she is, but not at home.
We just recently, similar, except we did Police Academy.
We just did the first one of those here, too.
Nice.
My youngest is getting introduced to all the greatest stuff from the 80s and some 90s. You know, Princess Bride and Spaceballs and just all the spoof ones. Naked Gun, Airplane.
We watched Airplane last week. You got to do Short Circuit.
I've never seen it because I always thought it looked incredibly stupid from the day it came out. My wife wants to see it. Let them watch it. That's fine.
Let them watch it. It is a really good movie.
Yeah. There's some stuff that is just not my thing, and yeah, I can't waste the hours on it. I
hear you there. I don't have much time to watch TV or movies anymore, and you know, so I try to be strategic with the good stuff.
Yeah, see, the nice thing is my youngest is the only one that still lives here, and she works for me two hours a day, and my wife works for me as my chief reality officer, which basically means she either gives me a nod or an eye roll when I come out with an idea. And that's whether I go with it or not, because she's smarter than I am. Higher IQ will think through stuff I won't think through because I'm so into an idea. She'll be like, okay, but what if? I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, David already invented that. But they have time during the day because that's, you know, she runs the house and takes care of all the important stuff around here so I can do my job. And it's a really good mix. They can watch all kinds of stuff during the day that I don't want to watch. And then we get together as, you know, the three of us in the evenings.
Nice.
And then the youngest is off playing games and watching friends Twitch streams and whatever else.
That's kind of the way I do it. I've got my office in a bedroom down in the basement. I've been working from home for about 7.5 years now. And literally when I walk out the door, do my best to turn it off. Mm-hmm. And it gives you that mental separation from working from home. So if anybody out there has been working from home with this whole plague thing going on for, you know, a month or two, and you're going to be doing it for a while, have a dedicated spot. Mm-hmm. Try to mentally say, when I'm not there, I'm not thinking about work. And you know, after a while, you kind of get in the swing of it. Yep. And it does work okay.
Yeah. I've been doing this full-time from home for probably 2.5-3 years now. But nice. Various pieces of my career, I've had, you know, aspects of it. They always kind of migrated to that because they've realized, well, if you can work from home effectively at 3 o'clock in the morning when stuff's on fire, you certainly can work at home when it's not on fire. And we're like, well, yeah. And save me the 2-hour commute, the gas, the tolls, the parking, and the lunch fees.
Exactly.
Going from here where I live in the middle of nowhere to downtown Dallas, it's a 45-mile drive.
Oof.
And yeah. The only reason I even took that downtown Dallas job is it was a $20 an hour raise on the contract I was getting. I was like, that kind of money is going to pad some coffers. I'll take that for a year and see what happens.
Oh, yeah.
15 months later, I was only working 10 minutes a day, so I got bored and left. And
I hear you.
I took count on the fingers. I took an $80,000 a year pay cut to get out of there and have something to do with the next place I went. So I took that down to pay the bills level, but I had already stockpiled.
I hear you. I get bored too easily, which is why I love consulting, because mm-hmm. every single day is different.
It truly is. I mean, I had stuff on a call this morning that I was like, well, that's interesting. I'm glad you brought me this customer, Mr. Customer of mine, because it's that MSP I was talking about. They're going to send me a PO periodically for here's 5 hours on this one, and it's just all health checks and, you know, turn some knobs, flip some switches, and then go fix the indexes. Bing, bing, cool. Bing. Almost every SQL server I needs that before they need a query toot.
Yep.
You know, low-hanging fruit for 5 hours.
Exactly. Low-hanging fruit, no queries to go review and validate. You know, indexes either work or they don't.
Yep. Well, I'll hit like the top three tables because they're all listed. You know, these are the most impactful indexes on these tables. Okay, let's do an analysis of each one. And that's going to get you 90% of the way there. And at 20%, we already crossed the line you wanted. I'm going to take you here. And if you need more and you want that extra 10% there, let's go for another 5 hours. And I'll get really deep into stuff. Mm-hmm. But they have a lot of little customers. The one we were talking about is in the medical field. And they have a third-party medical vendor that is giving us the okay to do certain things.
That's cool.
So this conversation dovetailed in really well with the last call I was on.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, a lot of times the third-party apps need help. And thankfully, there are a few ISVs out there that are willing to listen. Mm-hmm. And we've done a few in the medical field, a few in the manufacturing space. And for the ones that listen, great. It's like, listen to people because they know what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. And they're willing to give you the help for free to make your stuff better.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of hoping to branch into some of these larger ones, like, you know, we were talking about before the call and whatnot, where I know they have a big customer base where I can just offer them my services mm-hmm. and start the thing right. Go with, okay, you've built all these queries that are based on these three fields, you know, and doing this. Let's go ahead and put these in and then let customers tune, but not after they've already gotten mad at you because things are slow. Mm-hmm. Let's have it go fast from the beginning because none of them have a DBA. They have a lot of developers, and developers are very good at what they do. Yeah. Most developers are not great at indexing. They're okay. Because it's not their thing.
Well, it's not their thing, plus scale. I mean, when you're developing something, you may have mm-hmm. a handful of records to work against, not a billion.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, things change a little bit when you hit different tiers of scale and concurrency, and it gets mm-hmm. really interesting.
Oh, yeah. Quick. You know, they're building something to have 100 users, and I've got a customer over here with 1,000 users around the world doing stuff.
Yeah.
Including a lot of data entry people over in yeah, I don't know, in India or Ukraine or any of the other tech centers that support the United States as well as they do, just crunching numbers and taking tickets and whatnot. Well, you never thought it was going to be that big and that global for this customer, and it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you hit these points.
Let's pivot away a little bit from the tech side of this, and I know you're a nerd at heart, and we've clearly established that you really like the geeky stuff, and that's cool. What do you do outside of that when you need a break from that? Give me some hobbies, or what do you and the family like to go do?
I love to travel. You know, so before this whole crud went going around, we would travel a fair amount for fun. You know, we'd love to go see history, love to go see mountains and the ocean. We actually moved to Portland, Maine for 4 years because we loved it out there so much. Mm-hmm. Recently moved back. But yeah, I mean, from here, you know, Denver's an 8-hour drive. Love to go drive around the hills. Actually love technology in the automotive industry. So a lot of people love, you know, big motors and fast cars. And mm-hmm. quite frankly, the only time that you can really have fun with something like that is when you are beyond the point of being dangerous to yourself and others in the car. Mm-hmm. But if you have a small, slow car and you make it nimble, you can have a lot more fun with it, mm-hmm. and you can have a lot more fun at relatively safe speeds.
Yeah. Okay.
So, when I was a kid, used to do Sports Car Club of America solo racing.
Okay.
You know, my first car was a little Toyota with a motor in the back, and you know, go out there and just have a blast driving this thing for fun. And you know, worst case scenario, you flat spot a tire and kill a road cone. Big deal. You know, it's cheap. It's fun. It's honestly cheaper doing that than golfing for a year.
Golf is not a poor person's sport.
No. No, but you can successfully race for less than $1,000.
Nice.
Yeah. So, you know, I like to do a little bit of that. But yeah, a lot of travel for scenery, you know, try to become a poor amateur photographer. You know, I have fun. I don't share any of it, but yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. Nobody says you have to share it. It's really about the experience, and you know, as long as you're taking time, you know, not looking at everything through a camera like people tend to do. You know, they go to a thing and they've got their phone in front of them. They're not actually watching the thing. It's your kid's graduating. Look at it.
Yeah, it's like for work has been lucky enough to take me to England for SQL Bits. Mm-hmm. I went to Copenhagen, Denmark for the SQL Rally or SQL Nordic event a few years back. I've been to Barcelona twice for VMworld. Nice. Actually got lucky enough, VMworld Corp sent me to Sofia, Bulgaria for a week, mm-hmm. A few years back again. And it was a blast. It was absolutely amazing to just roam around and just see history, see different cultures and different people, and to sit back and have a two-hour conversation with a restaurant owner in Barcelona prior to me jumping up to speak for folks. You know, that was just surreal. It was absolutely cool. And, you know, it's like, yeah, I got some photos while I was there, but I got the memories and I want to go back. Mm-hmm. It's like we had actually been planning a big European vacation for this year, and we'll get there as soon as we can. But just loved it.
Now, when you go do some of this international travel, do you are you multilingual? Do you go pick up some of the basics before you go, or do you just get lucky and find English-speaking people there? Cross your fingers and hope.
I speak two languages, English and gibberish. foreign languages to me, I have to be immersed in it for it to really stick. You know, I had 3 years of Spanish in high school. I don't remember any of it. You know, it's a real problem of mine. I want to learn more languages. I really do. But thankfully, the places that I've been, I've not been held back because most folks knew English, and the stuff that didn't, Google Translate on my cell phone actually worked incredibly well, nice. Including the image overlay for things like street signs and menus. Mm-hmm. It worked beautifully well. I actually had a conversation with a cab driver in Bulgaria through the phone, just like the universal translator from Star Trek, and it just worked. You know, it's like I want to be able to speak their language because I feel really bad with, you know, asking them not to. Mm-hmm. But technology worked so well that I wasn't held back by it.
That's fantastic. If you do decide you want to start picking up a language, I'd like to recommend for everybody listening as well as you, Duolingo. They've gamified it. I've been learning stuff with them off and on for like 6-8 years, something like that.
Nice.
But it teaches from the perspective the same way you teach a small child when they're learning to speak at home. You know, pictures and simple words. It's a combination of typing, reading, you know, tapping on the words, speaking. But it's not just all of the same thing over and over. And they break it up into, you know, simple family things like mom and dad, or simple objects like, you know, car or milk. And then it gets more complex as it goes. And there's encouragements. Nice. Like I said, it's kind of gamified because you can hit levels of this, and there's leaderboards if you care about that kind of thing. Or you take it at your completely own pace. It's just really well done. And
that's cool.
You know, it's free. They have a paid, nice. You know, some benefits in the paid version as well, because they got to make money and pay their staff. But it's duolingo.com. Again, for everybody.
I got to check that out. That's cool.
Yeah, that's, I've got a 105-day streak now in Spanish, which I'm exactly like you. I took 3 years in high school, placed out of 12 hours of college based on that, and then promptly it just purged. I didn't do it intentionally, but if I don't use something, I lose it. That's why, exactly. That's why the streak is important to me. I don't really care. I'm not going to get anything for it. I could be on there for 500 days. Who cares? But I'm getting something personally out of it. It's fantastic.
I'm a lifelong learner. I want to learn. I try to learn everything about everything. And, you know, if you had to pick a figure in history that, you know, it's one of those, the person you most want to meet, for me, it'd be Leonardo da Vinci. Mm-hmm,
for sure.
You know, the true Renaissance man. It's like, I want to know everything about everything that I can possibly get my hands on.
Yeah, my Pluralsight list of courses that I have started a little bit of is long and distinguished, both the people and the topics. There's just so much I want to learn, but I also have my cycling hobby, which is very time consuming. Yeah. It's almost as expensive as golf, depending on how much you like your clubs, and how many types of bikes you ride. I've got 3 at the moment that I ride regularly. For nice. Different moods.
Well, the way I look at it, for every one thing that you learn, you now discover 10 more things that you need to go learn.
Mm-hmm. Especially in tech.
Especially, yes.
my biggest thing that I've been learning, and I've been learning by making the junior DBA over here, and I don't know if you've seen any of the blog posts, but today I learned some DBA tools command. And there have been 4 or 5 of those go. I've been having her learn the basics of stuff that mimics what we already do with T-SQL scripts. Nice. She gets on customer service every day and does the daily checks. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the core thing of her day is, you know, job failures and whatnot. So go work yourself through this, invent situations, try different parameters, learn all this. And what she doesn't realize is I'm teaching her PowerShell as well, the structure, which nice. I don't know. It's not uncommon for me to throw a thing at her just casually. Here, go look up this up on Microsoft Docs. This is a thing, and then go learn it and teach it back to me. That's how I learned TDE encryption.
Here, go learn it and give me the cliff notes.
An 18-year-old taught it to me and showed That's it to great. Me on screen. Literally, there's a 43-inch TV above her laptop that I can see.
Well, that's awesome.
Plugged in all the time.
Because now, you know, whenever the time is right for her to really, you know, enter the workforce full time, that's employable skills right there. I mean, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And it's the whole idea of learn something like you're going to teach it, you're going to automatically learn it better.
Yep.
And so I've also been like, okay, you're going to do this and you're going to blog it. At some point, you're going to teach it to our full-time DBA, Jeff, that is also a junior but is full-time and has more customers and responsibilities. Also my web guy and my Pluralsight icons guy. And when I'm developing course, anything else I need, he's like, you're paying me for 8 hours. What do you need me to do? You know, like, well, today I need you to go learn some stuff. And he's very good at self-training. So that helps.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, yeah, learn it like you're going to teach it. That's part of why, you know, I'll pick a presentation 6 months out for a topic I've barely touched. Mm-hmm. It's like, now I'm going to force myself to learn this because I have to present it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cosmos DB is the same thing. It's like I tinkered with it and it's really cool. And it's like, I need to learn more about this. Okay. So I'm going to go do this SQL Saturday 9 months from now with an advanced topic on it. Let's go.
See, I don't have that kind of confidence. I don't. I've been 20 years. I'm a DBA. But to go learn something that well that fast, I am 1,000% confident in teaching accidental DBAs what they need to know to not screw it up and to actually be able to remember it past what they read online one day. You know, first off, don't Google.
I'm a glutton for punishment, I guess. Well, I mean, I wanted to learn .NET a long time ago. I worked at a performing arts center that had a massive volunteer program. It was a brand new facility just being built. And what happens when you want to manage 1,300 volunteers in their positions and enrollment and schedules for 350 shows a year?
Giant database gets made.
What they had given the house management crew was Excel.
Yep.
Doesn't work. The act of that was chewing through personnel. You know, you couldn't even make it a season because you just get burned out. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to learn .NET and just said, I will build a volunteer management system for this organization and I'm going to have it done in 4 months before the next season starts.
Wow.
And I didn't get the time to do it in the office. So nights and weekends, 600 hours over about 4 months, and I built it. And the first week that it went live, it saved 50 hours of work between two volunteer coordinators.
They love you.
They absolutely loved the app. I'll refrain from the other. But in essence, they used it for 10 years before they replaced it with something else.
Wow.
That was long after I had moved on to a different role.
That's incredible. To have something last that long at all is impressive.
I'm proud of that. And it worked. You know, it orchestrated it, and it actually integrated with a ticketing system where they could just hit a button and load up new shows that were being created by the ticketing folks. Mm-hmm. It worked. It wasn't pretty. I'm not good at visual design, but it sure was functional.
Sounds like every Access database I ever did back in, you know, that's exactly. Where I got my start.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, mine. I had a couple friends that their parents were realtors in high school. Typewriter and notepads was how they operated. Yeah. Great folks, and I got them their first computer, showed them how to use it, built them an Access database so they could manage their listings. Nothing major, and then built some pretty reports so they could hit a button and print the stuff to hand out and have it all in one spot.
Mm-hmm.
Save them 40 to 50 hours a week right there.
Yeah.
And they absolutely loved it.
Access is great for what it's designed for.
Correct.
When it's you try to scale it, it just doesn't work as well.
Exactly. I still claim it's a good way to give a front end to data for people that are not programmers.
Yes, absolutely. We talked a little bit already about some of the events you've been to around the world. Obviously, I know you from your community involvement. I was introduced to you through a webinar that you gave on infrastructure virtual machine, something back 4 or 5 years ago. And then I met you at a SQL Saturday. If you could only do one more thing that is your community involvement, if you had to pare it down for whatever reason, what's the thing you enjoy doing the most?
past Summit.
Presenting, teaching, just going, all the above. I didn't really phrase that as well as I probably should have, but the thing that is your contribution to the community. Could be anything from blogging to events to whatever.
Well, I mean, the reason I was able to make such a splash in the community is that I talked about something that nobody else was talking about, which is, you know, just an example from last week. You know, a friend of mine messaged me and just said, hey, we've got a problem. We got a SQL Server that was cloned, literally cloned, and it runs half as fast as the original machine. Why? Is it infrastructure? And all of these people, literally, you know, MCMs, MVPs, they're all focusing on the SQL Server side. Did the infrastructure have a component to it? And in this one scenario, it didn't. But in many others, it actually does. And I think my contribution that I'm proud of is I got people to think beyond the database and start to look at the environmental factors that could be competing issues or, quite frankly, complementary things that they may not know about to make things even better. And I've had an absolute blast with that. And the whole cloud journey has been a part of this. It's, you know, capacity and it's building the things properly. And, you know, from an on-prem standpoint, how do we tune this stuff to get the best possible performance out of it? And, you know, I've had people come up to me years later and said, I saw you at this event. We virtualized everything and it runs better than physical. And, you know, just, it's just really, really cool to have that kind of an impact. It's just, it's so much fun.
It is. Matt, when people come up to you after your presentation or follow you out of the room when you're trying to hustle and get out of the way of the next guy, you know, I like to have the ones that go that are right before lunch at a SQL Saturday, because then I'm not, you know, being chased out of the room and having to talk to people in the hall. But the first few times I presented, there was nobody wanting to come talk to me. It's like, okay, well, you know, I got, hey, Kevin did good. But then there was the one time that Pinal came into my Security 101 presentation in Cincinnati, and that dude is the Pied Piper, because when he left to go do his, the entire room went with him. They just all followed him to his room, and I'm like, see ya. That was great.
It's amazing when you click with people. You know, 2 years ago, past Summit, I got lucky enough to give a virtualization infrastructure pre-con there. So we wrapped up at, I remember, 4:50 p.m. The line of people with specific questions for their environments was probably 30 people deep.
Wow.
I didn't leave that room until 8:45 that night when we were done answering questions.
Oh my, I would have passed out from no food by then.
I was hungry. You know, but that, honestly, there are four of us that stuck around. We all went out for food afterwards. You know, the past intro, the welcome party for the summit was done at that point. Yeah. So we all just went and got some food.
Yeah.
But yeah, and that's to me, when you know you resonate with people, when they ask really good questions because they're paying attention and, you know, take the time, sit there and answer it. It's like, I'm not going to leave until everybody's happy. Yeah. And then normally with all these things, I'll do a webinar about, you know, 1 or 2 weeks afterwards, because it takes time for this stuff to sink in. It's like, what questions have you thought of now that you didn't think of then? And, you know, let's go another hour or two.
That's awesome. I stuck around for an hour after an hour long talk one time, had four or five people in line. And again, they were missing it was here in Dallas. They were missing the lunch. The word escapes me right now. Fajita lunch. I was trying to say for holy, and I knew that wasn't right.
Well, hey, lunch can be replaced, but getting time with people can't.
Yep. And one of these guys had actually come to SQL Saturday just to shake my hand, because we'd been talking on the phone for a year. I was the DBA through another firm for his company, and we'd developed a friendship over all the conference calls that you get into and this and that for a year. We were friends, and he was like, I'm just going to roll over there, go just to say hi to Kevin, kill a few hours on a Saturday. And I thought, that's the coolest thing I've ever heard.
That is cool.
The imposter syndrome is strong with this Kevin here.
No.
I mean, but we all have that to some degree.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like I'm a nerd. I've made peace with that. It's like I do what I do, and I'm learning every day. And, you know, it's like, yeah, am I getting decent at what I do? Sure. There's more to do. There's more to learn. There's more to grow. You know, I'll always be able to do it better tomorrow from stuff that I'm learning today.
All right. Let me go a different direction on this. And this is more of the, you know, helping people kind of thing. Yeah. It was on the list. What advice would you give to someone wanting to do what you do? Maybe different, maybe exactly what you did, maybe not with all the repairs and whatnot. But How would you recommend somebody get into your area of IT to get that? Because sometimes it's hard to enter the field.
Oh, it's really hard. The biggest thing for me is ask questions. Mm-hmm. Because people in any role in IT, not everybody, but most people should, if somebody comes up to you and they said, I want to know why this is the way it is. You know, if my job is X and this task has a dependency on something that you do, mm-hmm. why is it that when something's running slow there that I feel it? Mm-hmm. You know, or just ask questions like this, because that's the kind of thing, it opens doors. If people in IT see that somebody else is willing to learn, they're usually willing to teach this stuff. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not an official role in the job, ask the stuff off to the side and start to explore and tinker. It's like if you want to get into, you know, VM architecture, well, you've got Hyper-V on your laptops probably, or Parallels on a Mac, or, you know, or Fusion, whatever. Start to build a VM. Start tinkering with this stuff. Mm-hmm. You want to learn availability groups. If you're a really good database developer and you want to start to learn the availability side, get a laptop. You know, for me, the stuff that I play with, the laptop doesn't really work. I mean, this thing back here has got 64 gigs of RAM. It's not enough. Mm-hmm. I get two of them. It's not enough. You know, I got equipment sitting in the next room that's got about 2 terabytes of RAM in it.
Nice.
But when you look at what I paid for it, it's not that expensive. I mean, right now you can go on eBay and pick up a 40-core physical machine with 500 gigs of RAM shipped to your house, factory refurbished, for less than $1,500.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not the fastest, and it's going to kill your power bill.
The first thing I thought of.
Yeah, but turn it on when you want to play with it. You know, put it in the middle of your living room, use it as a space heater for all I care. I mean, it works great for that, too. But you turn it on, play with it, turn it off. If you don't have the space or want to spend the money on this, I'm certain you've got some cloud credits there. Mm-hmm. Spin stuff up on an Azure or any of the cloud platforms that you really care about. I'm partial to Azure myself.
Same.
You know, fire stuff up there, play with it, tear it down when you're done. You know, cost you about as much money as it would to go buy a latte somewhere.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we do here. I've got a migration from one host to Azure that I'm finishing up Thursday. And they had no clue what they needed. You know, they barely had any idea what they had. I had to go in and look at it. And it was a web edition 3-core or 3-processor, you know, setup. And that web thing bit me a few times. But I just spun them up a really basic Azure VM. I was like, okay, let's beat up on this one. And just, yeah. And we'll start low and we'll pump it up as we need to. Because they had backup budget issues on it. You know, they were like, well, we need to keep it under the X dollars a month, you know. It's like, cool. Okay, well, you're going to pay for the VM, you're going to pay for the disks, here's the pricing calculator. You go do that part, and you have to buy licenses. You have to get your SQL licenses, and that was the longest part, was getting that PO done. But yeah. I spin stuff up in Azure and back down all the time. So yeah. Set the auto shutdown, back it up, in case you're going to need it again. It's really not that hard to do. If I can learn it, any fool can learn it.
Exactly. There's tons of information out there. I mean, for me, you know, I'm thrifty. I'm not cheap. I'm thrifty. Mm-hmm. Part of my lab is out on Azure. Part of it is in the stack of equipment I have in the other room. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me to do my full power of my lab on Azure, I priced it out, would run me between 10 and 12 grand a month.
Probably not that kind of money you have.
I don't have that. Point blank. I don't have it, and I'm not willing to spend it. Mm-hmm. But to buy a physical server here for a grand, 1500, it's built to run 24/7. It's not quite the fastest, but it works great and lets me test some pretty big stuff, and then turn it off when I need it, run it for 3 or 4 years, give it to somebody that wants a home lab, turn around and reinvest. I can't build consumer grade equipment anywhere close to that. These things are built for this stuff. They don't take up that much space. They don't really kill that much power, especially if you turn it off when you're done. Mm-hmm. You know, do that if it exceeds your budget for the cloud. But again, you can get cloud credits fairly easily. Hopefully you've got MSDN. There's some credits that come with that. Whatever it takes to go explore this stuff, and it doesn't just have to be SQL Server. It's what if I want to see the difference on SQL Server between spindle disks and SSDs mm-hmm. and NVMe? What is that going to do to my particular workload? So one, you need a way to simulate your workload, so distributed replay or any other tool out there, and now park a copy of the database on there. Mm-hmm. Test it. spin up another one or change the disks out for SSDs, redo the test, do the same thing with the ultra fast storage out there, which is NVMe. Do the same thing. Figure it out before you actually start poking around at work and spending big budget money on this stuff. You know, I've got a lot of folks out there, they're dropping $1 million on storage and they go put their SQL Server on there and they get a 2% performance gain. That's because it's code bound. It's not storage bound.
Yep. If you don't, if you don't know what you've got in there, you don't know where to go drop your money. But people will throw money at it because it's an easier decision. Their, you know, their budget for CapEx is this already. It's already been approved. They got to spend it somewhere.
Yeah.
And then they get mad because it doesn't go any faster.
But that's just it. That goes back to the single biggest thing that that bugs me. People need to be objective.
For sure.
Testing objective metrics. Good data collection from all points in the environment that matter and validate this stuff. Because when people base a mega decision on a single data point, you're doomed to fail.
Yeah.
You know, and as a consultant, you really can't do that, because if somebody's banking serious cash on a something that you tell them to go do, you've got to be right or else they're going to get upset.
Yeah, they are.
You know, I had one about a year ago. A customer we've been working with for a while, we finally got some truth out of their infrastructure team, and it turns out that they had two different fiber switches that would not natively communicate together.
Mm-hmm.
So they had 7 all-flash arrays, and it was kind of like connecting a fire hose to a straw. You know, it just doesn't work. And they didn't want to ask for the budget to go update the switches. So these folks were basically bottlenecking these mega SQL servers every single day during the business hours. And I went and told the CIO, and I just said, look, if you want to fix this, you got to drop $600,000 now in order to fix this major business problem with these things going so slow that people weren't able to do their jobs at a financial management firm during the day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't have that.
No, he had the PO in his hand an hour and a half later. They had the equipment, and a week later, problem disappeared as soon as they put it in. But that's the kind of purchase that you really got to have the objective data behind it. And I spent 4 hours at a whiteboard mapping out their entire environment, running numbers on all these different pieces. And then literally you start at the two ends and work your way together. And hey, the spot in the middle just didn't line up. What's in between there?
Yeah. Mr. Consultant guy comes in and says, drop 600 again. Grant, Mr. Employee guy can't say that, or has already been rejected on that many times.
That's one of the benefits with being a consultant. Is sometimes you can say the exact same thing that somebody else in the organization says, and you get listened to. I had an exact case of this. DBAs knew that there was an infrastructure problem with networking performance, actually, for this big data move that they were doing every night. They had written an executive summary, full report, submitted it to management. They got ignored. Mm-hmm. Submitted it monthly for 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Then they brought me in because the management just didn't believe them. I look at the report, and I mean, I hope the guys are listening to this at some point, so they're going to laugh. But the report was spot on. They had everything they needed. I was brought in to just put a stamp of approval on it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to go do the presentation for the executives, I memorized their executive summary in the hotel room the night before, and word for word said to them exactly what their report had been saying. It's like, oh, this is great. We haven't heard this before. And then they went and fixed it. And the guys in the back of the room were just laughing their butts off the whole time.
I call this the coach effect, what you just described. I was a cycling coach for a number of years, but only for juniors, just kids. You know, and it was voluntary stuff. And it was just to get kids off the Xbox and onto a bike. You know, go play Xbox later, but be healthy. And I just love cycling, of course. But it was over and over and over. I would see parent A or parent B tell junior, you know, go do this. And they'd protest, and they'd be kids. They would do their normal thing. And these are all at the age they're starting to have their own opinions and whatnot. And, you know, late elementary, middle school, and then into high school. You know, go do this, blah, blah, blah. And I just look at him, hey, Johnny, why don't you go do this? And it'd be the exact same words that mom or dad said. And they go, okay, coach, off they go. And the mom would just give me this dumbfounded look. I was like, because I'm not you. That's why. They do the same thing to their teachers. You know,
simple as that.
Teacher says it, principal says it. It's two different levels of authority. They think I have authority over them. I don't. You're the mom.
Yep. One of the fun parts about being a consultant is listening to what's going on. Because if the folks that you're working with are right and they can't push something through, maybe it just takes you repeating the exact same thing or slightly with a different twist on it, mm-hmm. and you can get stuff pushed through to help everybody do their job better.
Yep. Oh, my favorite thing on a call when I'm delivering results is, you know, I look at a SQL Server and a few of the dials have been turned, of the ones I'm going to touch. I could say, your DBA team has obviously been tuning this server because there is so much right going on here. I found yep. a couple of little things that aren't really as, you know, as noticeable. And it's, you know, parallelism, cost threshold, max TOP, you know, major things that the guys missed, but I want to make them look good. So now they'll let me, they'll let me go touch the other stuff.
Oh yeah. Well, I found one just a couple of weeks ago, company, all the settings on the SQL Server were exactly like what I would do. And I don't make a lot of blanket rules, but I mean, things were lined up great. Mm-hmm. We were looking at some ETL procedures that night, a bunch of T-SQL. And I mean, the code was commented. It was structured properly. Everything was, you know, step by step. It was wonderful. And then I went looking at their database design, and they had two big tables, each one with no primary key, no clustered index, no indexing, and each one had 17 billion records in it.
Okay, I can see them doing that for fast loading and slamming a bunch of data in it, sure.
For fast loading and slamming stuff in there, that's great, but this was loaded every night and then queried off of multiple times a second through the next day.
Let's make an index script over here. Let's put a clustered index on it for you.
Yeah, well, it's so big they need partitioning or, you know, unioned views with some poor man's partitioning.
Yeah.
Something. But, you know, I started looking at execution plans and just like, yeah, okay, we're going to go fix this. Everything else was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
These folks really know what they're doing. It's that one thing.
Yep. Yeah, I don't get that deep on most of mine because my client base is actually pretty small. Almost all of them have no DBA at all. And that's the market I go for. So a lot of times that low-hanging fruit gets them where they need to be for a small shop. You know, if somebody comes to me and says, I've got 10 SQL servers, I'm like, why are you calling me? Where's your DBA? Oh, well, we fired him. Great. You fired him because I have a mess to clean up. Okay. Let's do that.
Yep.
That's one of my current clients. Name withheld.
We've got one that we've been helping. They do have DBAs, but they have over 90,000 SQL servers. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. I don't even know what else to say on that one.
That's prod and dev, but it takes, what was it, 40 petabytes of storage for one day's worth of backups?
Wow.
It's obscene.
You have blown my mind. That's the biggest environment I've heard of.
I've seen a couple bigger than that, unfortunately. I did not get to manage those, thankfully.
Get to, have to. Depends on your perspective.
No, it would have been a good opportunity for learning, but
yeah.
You hit a point where, no.
Yeah, the problem I have with the larger shops and the large environments is it takes forever to get stuff done.
Yes.
You know, I like to, when I can send an email to the owner of the place and go, I need to do this, and I need to do it now, or I need to do it tonight. And they're like, okay, we trust you. Go ahead. And I've got the rights.
Yep.
Yeah, I've got the God rights to do it. And then they go in the next morning like, hey, that thing worked. It's going faster now. Excellent.
Yep. I'm okay with procedure. I just hate red tape.
Yeah.
I hate bureaucracy around the red tape. Yeah.
That's why I stay out of certain industries, typically healthcare, public sector, and banking. Yeah, most legal. Because if they decide not to pay me, what am I going to do? Sue them?
If you have a good contract, sure.
But the money involved in that to fight a team of lawyers as the
understood.
Client. I know people that have lost that fight many times. And it's like,
I hear you.
That said, I'll be signing with one of them today. So,
oh.
But they have a reputation with somebody I know of being very, very good to work with. So
that's cool.
Anyway, last thing we get to do on this one is the shout out. Any organization, it could be personal, you know, charitable, commercial, whatever. Anything you think deserves a little bit of love out there on the internet.
Yeah. Hit my home blog, davidklee.net. Special thanks to Chrissy Lemaire and her team over at the DBA Tools. I cannot live without those tools. They've been doing phenomenal work. Shout out to the folks that we work with day to day, you know, who you are. You know, and thanks to the SQL Server community as a whole. if it were not for the SQL Server community, I would not have gone independent as a consultant.
Excellent.
And that's a powerful statement, I know.
It is. SQL community itself is a powerful phrase.
It is. This community has been special to me personally and professionally. When we went independent almost 7 years ago now, I had a very friendly but strong non-compete from my previous employer. You know, happy to abide by that, but we had no customers lined up, and we just had word of mouth. And we got our first customer on the third day that we were in business. Mm-hmm. And that set the stage for really making this work. And it was literally word of mouth from somebody that had sat in a SQL Saturday presentation. Mm. And that's phenomenal.
Those are great too. I mean, I don't do them to get business. I do them to help DBAs, because the what I do and the level I do it is all entry level stuff.
Yeah.
But some of them still contact me. I do a pre-con as well. And because to me it's community and that means something. My day to day work pays my bills and funds my retirement. If I do a pre-con, I want it to be cheap. So I tell the group, I'm like, okay, make this as cheap as you can. If you feel like you have to give me a check, I'm going to give it right back to you with an autograph on it for your group to so y'all can buy pizza or do whatever you want to do with it. I don't want to make money here. That's not why I'm here. I'll even go as a sponsor just to help the group out. No, I'm not going to pick up any business in Cincinnati. You know, maybe in Dallas, but that helps.
No, it's one of those. I want to teach people that want to learn. Mm-hmm,
exactly.
Period. Simple as that. And you know, things like the stuff that you get paid for, it's great. Usually, I'm looking to cover travel costs, and that's it. And right now, there's no travel cost, so it's even better.
It's all virtual.
You know, it's one of those. If you like it and you want the specialty work, definitely call me. You know, we have a blast with this stuff. If it's something I can't do, I've got plenty of good folks out there that I can refer you to. Mm-hmm. So BI, security, that kind of stuff. You know, I know how to spell BI. You know, so I'm happy to send that on to, you know, a number of folks. Same thing with security. I can do it, but there are folks that do it better.
Yep.
You know, so I have a lot of fun with this stuff. And that's my biggest thing. If there's a topic if somebody out there wants to see me present on, let me know. I'm happy to come up with custom content that we can put out there with, you know, SQL Saturday presentations, webinars, you know, whatever. I have a lot of fun, but I want to know what people want, because I don't want to just talk to the wall, because that's never fun.
Exactly. Well, David, thank you so much for coming by. I've had a blast. I've been looking forward to this for a couple of weeks since we scheduled it. I'm like, you know, when I first got back into the community aspect, which is completely different from 10 years before, I was like, you're one of the first guys I met. And because I needed to know outside of the stuff I knew, I've always just kind of been following your career, and we've seen each other a bunch of different places and whatnot. This has been a tremendous, tremendous talk, and I've very much enjoyed it.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you.
All right. Take care. I'm going to go ahead and turn this thing off now.